keep it locked on Middays with Marcus Maben, presented by PapaJohns.com on 93.9 The Ville. And right now, enjoy three medium one-topping pizzas for $5.55 each when using the promo code MABEN5.
Welcome back. Welcome back. It's Midday with Marcus Maben, 8150. 93.9 is the number. 93.9 is the station. People, the weather has officially gotten colder. So now it's time for you to save $1,000 on the train comfort system at dfhcompany.com. Or just DFH Company. From now until mid-December, DFH Company will give $1,000 off a new train comfort system. Ask them about really low financing. It's hard to stop a train, and it's hard not to call DFH Company today at 968-6222 or look them up online at dfhcompany.com. Visit dfhcompany.com for complete program eligibility dates, details, restrictions, subject to credit approval. People, positivity is my thing. We did not want to talk about anything that wasn't positive, but you forced us to do it. So now I'm going to counteract. I am going to counterbalance the first hour of the show by giving you a specialty. In the studio, we have, I'm talking about the day one of the day ones. I mean, we're talking about going back to the crumb era day ones. I don't like to say ages. I don't like to really say dates. Rex E. Karma has joined us in the studio in a co-hosting this faculty standard. Welcome, Coach. Welcome, Coach Rex E. Karma. How's it going?
Marcus, I'm a little bit surprised you mentioned the word co-hosting. I thought you had like 3 minutes to fill and you just grabbed me off the sidewalk and said, hey, I talk for 3 minutes.
Listen, I run into that exact problem all the time. I say, listen, you come in here, you get comfortable. Actually, at first I say call. You know, I try to get at least a phone interview. And then I find out I try to massage and feel comfortable. And now that you're comfortable, you can sit in the studio. We're right around the corner from you all the time, Coach. And you're a day one of all day ones. So you get in here anytime you want to announce anything.
Well, and I want to know, is there more pressure here or going on Jim Rome? If y'all don't know, Coach Karma was on the Jim Rome show before.
I did not. Oh, you got to get right.
Jim Rome was a lot of pressure, but I think you guys are being a lot of fun because people didn't know on that radio show. I've got this. My office is about the size of a closet, by the way, and somehow Bob Dominey was in my office while I was taking that interview and had a cameraman in my office. Nice. With a camera like right in the back of my head. So I had a TV camera and Jim Rome behind me and Jim Rome in front of me. So that was a lot of pressure. But with you guys, it's a lot of fun. It's just talking to good friends deal. And we'll have a good time.
Oh, okay, well, I'm not going to make this into a normal interview situation. I mean, you're a day one. Let's just kind of pull back the curtain a tad bit. We come in here, we're instantly talking about, you know, what do you like about this team? We're having general conversation, and you present people. If I wasn't the kind of guy that I am, if I didn't have and show as much integrity, I would have stole this man's idea, and I would have pawned it off as my own. Coach E. Karma comes with the idea. Shame on you, listeners. Shame on you, callers. Shame on you, Steve Rummage. Shame on you, Brian Hall. Shame on me. Why has none of us suggested Honest and Ray Spalding just goaltend the first three shots of the game? Listen, he said it, or we said it. We came to that conclusion, and I thought about it. I would love to see that. Imagine the Yum Center knowing that any shot that goes anywhere near the gym or near the rim at the beginning of the game, you just see Ray Spalding or Honest just eat it up. Goaltending or not, just eat it up and put it in the first. I mean, hell, they're shooting a pretty good percentage on us in the first shots anyway.
That's true.
So how about you stop that early run by pitching one shot, goaltend the first two shots, just throw them in the front row and just get them thinking about that. Now, that is the psychology of Rex E. Karma, the mastermind tennis coach. Thank you for that idea. You were serious with the idea, right?
I mean, I coach a sport that it serves overheads that are pounding at over 100 miles per hour on a regular basis. Why not just pound that shot? I mean,
even if you risk giving up that first serve just on getting somebody's attention with it. with the attempt.
Scare him a little bit. I mean, you look back, Purvis Ellison blew up some shots, and that team did all right. You look even further back, Patrick Ewing.
Yeah.
Marcus, you mentioned that. Always did that. Yep. That was a part of his script. They did all right.
Good teams.
And, you know, a team down the road with Anthony Davis did a little bit of that, and that's did it all right. The commonality is national championships.
That's fair. That's a good point. I mean, when he not
that's
only
such
comes
a good point
that
I'm getting nervous about my position in this radio station.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, cause he brought some serious backup with that too.
Right. Okay. So let's not give the fair props to the basketball team, and give fair props to the other sports. I mean, you had a monster.
Yeah.
Hey, you're coming off a monster run. Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, with our fall season, we had a great fall season. It's really special to have one nationally ranked doubles team on your campus, because it's, you know, 1,300 doubles teams. They rank 60. It's hard to get, but we've been really
top
fortunate.
60
they have,
doubles team.
We have three in the top 50. So not only one in our campus, we have three in our campus, and one of them is sixth in the country. So that's the first time in program history that we have three doubles teams nationally ranked simultaneously. So again, it's about blocking. It's about aggression. It's about control. In the tennis court, we try to control the net in doubles. And what I'm saying with Anas and Ray is I want them to control that rim and that area around the rim, that people in the back of their mind when they're going to – when they're going to the hole, they're going to think like, is my shot going to get pitched?
So the aggression, like, are you wanting to bring out the aggression in them by knowing that there's a spot on this court that we're going to own night in, night out?
Absolutely.
That's your double strategy.
Marcus, you know way more about basketball than me, but it works in tennis, because if you control that net in tennis, you get people to cough up unforced errors.
Yeah.
Unforced errors in basketball is missed layups, missed push putbacks, missed little jump hooks, because they're thinking, am I going to get this shot blocked?
Mm. Development of your players from recruitment to nationally ranked. What has that been like? What has been the biggest key for you to kind of get them? Is it sharp, still sharp and steel? Is the competition between each other? What has gotten them to grow so fast?
You know, Marcus, it's about the love of the game. The love of the game. I've got a group of tennis players right now on this campus that are like gym rats.
Right.
They're at the tennis court. You know, when you were a basketball player, you're taking extra shots in the evenings, in the mornings. And I've got a group of guys that they accelerate their development because they're like gym rats for tennis players, and they love the game. They respect something Dan McDonald always shared with me, and he goes, just get guys that respect the game and you're going to be in good shape. And I've got a team of that.
So when you say that, you're talking about during recruiting. Can you see that? Like, do you acknowledge how much of a gym rat? Like, do you look for signs to say they love it versus they're really, really talented? Because it has to be very difficult to turn down guy who doesn't really show the passion, but all the talent in the world. And then you say, I can bring the passion out. And then 9 times out of 10, you find out you really can't bring the passion out of somebody if they don't have it in recruit, like when you're recruiting.
Exactly. You're right. It's tough, but I'll talk to parents and to ask them the schedule, parents the schedule, the coaches the schedule. I want to know how much time is this guy regularly putting in and working on his game before he gets to UofL, because sometimes some of these kids, once they get on campus, they tone everything down. They've achieved their goals.
Right.
And I want guys that have higher goals than winning in college. They either love it or they want to play pro. And those are a few and far between, but you've got to really look for those guys.
Okay. I'm always fascinated with the younger circuit, because when you talk tennis, here's always a fascinating collision. Tennis players who are really, really good, and you start talking about professional versus, you know, young potential tennis players, right? Of course, you always have your basketball. Oh, well, they let the tennis players do it. You know why they have such a problem? Where do you fall as far as getting kids involved and pushing them Is it like a do you see the coaching of young tennis players directed towards making money?
In certain
because
places.
Because in basketball, that's frowned upon.
Yeah, right. In certain places. Steve and Marcus, I just came back from recruiting the Orange Bowl World Championships. Orange Bowl, where the top junior players in the world are.
Florida?
So, in Florida. It's in Plantation, Florida. It's always right around Miami.
Yeah.
There's agents. There's consulting firms.
Wait,
there's
and what age group is this?
This is 15 through 18.
Think about that, Steve. Yeah. That's why I had to ask him that.
Yeah, that's good.
You're at a place, at a camp, 15 through 18. You say agents are there. You say firms. What kind of firms?
Consulting firms.
There's potential sponsors. How
dangerous and fascinating is that? So,
but also, I look around, see half the head coaches from the ACC, Stanford, UCLA, and USC there. I see every major coach, every major conference. They're sitting on the same bleachers as agents and everything. And we're all looking at the same kid because really, you know, all of us were there in the early rounds, right. But in the later rounds, the quarterfinals, the semifinals, finals, we're all gone. Those kids are going to turn pro.
Right.
Those kids will probably turn pro that month or the next month. They're not going to college. We only want kids that are going to college, and a lot of those kids aren't.
So, right. So you see, like it kind of works itself out, like as far as. You know how the market sets the mark on who does what, and so do you clash with that? Do you find yourself competing with convincing kids to come to college rather than turn pro or rather than start looking for sponsorships? I mean, do you run into that problem at all?
Every year, every month, because those kids have pressure on them to try to be a pro, especially in these world championships. All the countries have their national teams. And their national player of the years, and they're there.
Right.
Even if everybody sees, hey, that guy's not ready, he needs to go play college. In their minds is those national coaches, hey, this is the best player in our country. If he doesn't turn pro, who will?
Right.
So they're getting pressure from one end, and you're trying to talk to them about trying college for a year before they go out and do it. So it's very professionalized in those settings.
So there is no college, one and done rules. There's no situation between guys, coming to college and mandatory minimums of, their age or anything like that.
Marcus, some of those kids quit school at 14.
Wow, to just concentrate.
They're going to concentrate on tennis. They're already sponsored by their federations. I mean, those guys, you just avoid them. You see a group of players. These are pro bound. They already turned pro mentally after the eighth grade.
Is that okay?
See, because that's my question with you. The NCAA, I mean, I'm looking, we're in the NCAA Division I tennis championships here. Why do you think that is – in certain sports looked at as, and I don't even know if it's something you can answer, but why do you think that's looked at in some sports like, well, that's no big deal here, but in basketball or football, that would be a
huge
problem.
Is it because they seem to be well taken care of in the tennis world? Just the stigma of rich kids, playing tennis. They got to be.
That's not a bad point, though.
Yeah, coming from educated families. Yeah. I'm sure they're fine.
Possibly, but Pete Sampras won the U.S. Open, which currently pays $4 million a year to win at 17 years old. Michael Chang he did that at 19. Michael Chang won at 17. Boris Becker won Wimbledon at 18.
Wow.
These guys are collecting seven-digit paychecks.
It's a big money sport. Yeah.
As teenagers.
So how do we get these kids involved in tennis right now, Steve? Elijah, more football.
My son, hey, no kidding.
I that was going to be an awkward transition. Come on, Rex. I cannot have you on here. I need you to step outside of Coach Rexy Karma. Talk about this prodigy of yours, please.
I've got two young sons that love tennis.
Give me the
Marcus,
ages.
Marcus, they love tennis.
Give me the ages.
The fifth grade and the ninth grader.
The ninth grader, that's the one who couldn't lead the basketball alone, right?
They both love basketball. Marcus, one looked like you last week. He scored 24 points, grabbed 17 rebounds. But
see what I'm saying?
Steve, listen to this. But he only had one assist. So every shot Marcus didn't want to give up that ball. He was going to finish on the fast. He was going to lead the fast break.
What do you mean, kind of? Right.
It was you or Nate Johnson. Between you guys, you all never miss a shot opportunity.
Nate, I won't ask you for the ball. Don't ask me for the ball.
It's an understanding.
You go handle your business. With that being said, okay, so is this, okay, because they're, you know, because they're so good in tennis, you know, and it's kind of like my uncle always driving my cousin Cameron Maben towards baseball because, you know, just the injury risk is less and things like that. Do you worry about that, or do you appreciate the lack of specialization? I couldn't phrase it right. That they're playing, you know, a basketball, which helps them develop a lot of other fine motor skills. I mean, do you see the benefit outweighing the risk of having them playing basketball versus just being good at tennis and being really good and focused at tennis?
I had to make that decision because my the one that's in the ninth grade, he quit basketball. I had to stop the basketball at eighth grade because it was too physical. There's a lot of huge guys, and I was afraid that they're going to get injured. But
play
eighth grade. Huh?
I mean, not to get sensitive, but how did that conversation go?
I just looked at him at his last game in the last tournament of his league, and I said, hey, I really enjoyed it. It's your last game. And proud of you as a basketball player.
Was he mature enough to accept that?
I kind of like the whole year I was saying, man, this is your last run.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
This is your graduation for basketball.
Right. Which had to be hard.
Man, I've watched you when you first was here, a freshman, and you all practice at Cardinal Arena. I'd step out of my office, go to that high walkway over there, and watched Coach Crum coach you, Scooter McRae, Larry Gay, all of those guys. So I love basketball.
So I kind of started off with the – I mean, so they're specialized now in tennis. Are both of them going, you know, just full tennis?
The fifth grader still plays basketball. He had a big game last week and only had he got about 25 shots off and had one assist.
Full Steph Curry on you already. But the older one, okay, so give us a potential level. Like, what do you see? Again, I'm not the guy who could ever judge my family, you know, on their ability to achieve. Where are you looking at Xavier?
With Xavier, it's good. You know my name and my son, but he wants to play college. He's grown around it.
Oh, come on, Rex. I will accuse you of self-serving right now. Is he really college material, or is he like come on, Rex. He's good.
I think he needs college. He's not ready to turn pro point. He really needs, there's a value in college, and he wants to be a part of a team. That's fair. Wants to be coached up. He wants to go to class. He likes class. He's never gotten.
So where's he going to school at?
We're hoping here.
Right.
We're hoping here.
I was gonna say, are we violating anything right now by having this conversation?
Right.
Does your child go to school at when you're the coach at the school? Don't go all Allen Houston on us and take the Tennessee Wade Houston. Go take the
last minute.
Yeah. Right. Take the Tennessee job and Xavier Commerce last second flip.
Hopefully I'll be here at the time and love to be here, and hopefully he'll choose. It's his choice, but everything's leaning towards this way.
Well, and not to get too far off here, not to get too in depth, but there was transition, and how's kind of with the university, how's that been for you? Is everything has it been smooth from with Vince taking over now, and kind of how's your dealings been with him? Have you kind of Does everything seem to roll smooth with the tennis?
Yeah, I mean, Vince is very hands-on, very personable, and very outgoing.
Yeah.
So, and also, Vince is a tennis player himself.
Really?
He played a lot of advanced adult league tennis.
Wow.
Marcus, he was like Kenny a 4.0, 4.5 rated player.
Kenny Bust Drew is what I want to know.
Drew Deaner?
Yeah.
It would be close. It would be close.
Hey.
He knows tennis, and yeah. he came and met with me, then met with the team. So yeah. he's really hands-on.
Socially, steering people towards Louisville's tennis. Like, what is your plan? What is your project? Because we have you on here. People are listening to you right now. People who don't normally, like, to hear you talk basketball and mm-hmm. hear you talk sports, and you don't represent that stigma, that cliche tennis guy that, you know, that you hear about, just the country club guy, and, you know, they're like, you're everything but, right? So I know there's people listening right now and saying, now, if I can still be cool, you know, or be a little different and get into tennis, you know, where do I start? Like, where do I start? Where do I start getting my kids involved if I want to be a part of Louisville tennis?
Sure. I mean, one of the things is you got to start at a young age, but I encourage everybody to learn it because it's great motor skills, hand to eye, footwork. Yeah. It translates. That's why I like my sons playing basketball, because those two sports go hand in hand.
Is it necessary to be in like a club atmosphere?
Not necessarily. I mean, if you have a good coach with you and you have some training partners, that's really all you need. I mean, Marcus, I grew up, I'm a Doss High School grad. I mean, I was with, you know, same school as Derek Anderson. We grew up in the south end of town. I had my one brother coached me. One brother was my training partner, and we played tournaments, and I played for UofL, had a good career, and I'm still here.
What's the local scene like as far as young tennis clubs and things like that? Or would you say go to universities, you know, or, you know, like come to Louisville summer camp and then go from there? Or would you say go to local tennis clubs and kind of get involved through there?
Either one works. I know we've got a winter camp coming up the beginning of next week. Thank you for ushering
us. I'm working
right
hard
into that.
Here. This is professionalism.
It's open to anyone. So we really teach them in a college setting with college coaches. So any of them that aspire to play beyond high school, it's a good resource. But there's other good local clubs around town that offer tennis and good coaching there.
So we don't want to support others. We want to steer them to your camps. I mean, where do we find out about your camps? Are we talking gocars.com? Are we talking about your personal?
Yeah, you could email me at rex@gocards.com and
rex@gocards.com
or call the Bass Rudd Tennis Center 502-852-1682 and they'll give you that information. So
season wise, what are we looking for before we get you out of here? Like, you sound excited, you know, like I said, you're in the studio now, and again, you know where it is, and now you come here anytime you want to, like I said, even if you want to pop your head in and do a segment, you know.
Yeah, just come hang out.
Yeah, you're more than welcome. So, moving forward, how excited are you? Are you going to sit in the studio right now and lower expectations, say, oh, we're hoping to have a decent season, and we've got a lot of young guys, or are you going to say, watch out for us?
A little bit of both, because I only have one senior in the starting lineup, but I'm really confident in them. You know, a lot of times when you trust that locker room, when a coach walks in and he trusts that locker room, and when he walks out, that locker room is going to be confident, positive energy. I've got a group of guys like that. I got gym rats. They have a lot of high goals. But, you know, I'll just tell you, Marcus and Steve, our goal is to be hosting the NCAA first and second round. We want to be one of the elite teams in the country that host their first and second round, and that's truly our goal.
And you had
the
facilities
year.
To do it.
Oh
yeah.
We do have a nice facility. Kevin Miller, who's retiring in January, did a great job.
It was supposed to be positive, all positive. You bring that one in,
but I have to give him credit. He found the funding to redo all of our outdoor courts, and he's going to help us put a scoreboard up there very soon. And yeah, he's done a great job for us.
One uncomfortable question I have to ask you before you get out of here. I remember, you know, when I first started kind of hanging around the tennis center, I remember watching a match, and I remember seeing there was no official, and they were out there calling their own lines.
Right.
Tell me that's not college tennis anymore at all.
It's 50-50, Marcus. Listen. They do call their own lines because they would need 8 or 9 referees per court, so you can't do that. But we have an umpire on every single court that if there's an appeal, they go to the umpire, and the umpire says it was in or out. So every if you watch six singles matches, there'll be six umpires on each court.
But they're not actually actively calling every play.
No. The players got
to
do that.
Yeah, that was fascinating.
But Marcus, those kids, those players have been doing that since they were 6 or 7 years old.
Right.
So that's the part of their
imagine playing a game with no referee in any sport. Like I said, kudos to the tennis players for not turning this into anarchy.
But Steve, pick up basketball. There's no referees there.
But you need it.
Everybody.
You need it.
I think, but if you grow up, and what Coach Rex was saying earlier, I mean, if you grow up and you respect the game and there's kind of an honor there, I think you can get by with it. I mean, like now.
Now, yeah, I'm giving a hard time about that.
Now, me and Pickup, I mean, they're going to say, hey, it was off you. Well, not me. Hey, go to the review.
I'm taking the ball and saying, man, we're not going down there, man. That's exactly. This is my ball, man. Y'all know this is my ball.
I've watched the Rebel basketball. There's times in the back in the day where they were playing at JCC, Jewish Community. Then there would be some kind of controversy on a big call. Griff or Derek Smith whoever, they grab the ball and say, hey, this is how it goes. Everybody just calms down and runs with it. So in Marcus Day, he grabbed the ball and he goes, no, that wasn't a foul. Let's go.
Come on back down here. Like, I don't know what y'all standing down there for. The ball's down on this end.
We
can shoot for it. Rex, listen, I appreciate it. Open door policy.
Yes.
Good luck. Keep those guys in shape. It was fascinating hearing you talk about the comparisons between the younger tennis environment. I'm sure we're going to talk about that a little later on, being that the LeVar balls and Alonzo balls are kind of coming to a crossroads in sports of professionalism at an early age and kind of letting the market figure out itself. This is interesting.
Marcus, they've had in tennis that for a long time that have gigantic promotion deals for teenagers already. You know, that's not in individual sports like tennis and golf. They have marketing firms just for like if there's a superstar out there.
You mean like Adidas?
What's that?
You mean like Adidas, like big companies like that?
Yeah, I mean like Tiger Woods when he was young, coming right out of Stanford, they had a big marketing thing. When Michael Chang won the French Open at 17, they already had Prince, Nike, all.
So he had more money in sponsorship than he won for actually winning.
Sharapova, one year she crushed it.
Yeah,
she was injured. She played 4 months, and I think she made $2 million on the court, $14 million. Jeez. Off the court. $14 million off the court.
There's so much more money in basketball, though. Would you agree with that?
I agree.
So is that what makes people uncomfortable? Just, you know, because having two or three people here and there, you know, killing. Because you had examples, and all those people you named were all-time greats.
Right.
In other sports, basketball and football, you have guys that are not all-time greats and still the potential to make all-time great money in other sports. Is that where you find the, you know, kind of the fulcrum line of where it's okay? Is it just too many people with too many opportunities in the revenue generating sports, you know, so to speak? I mean, is that what you notice? I mean, okay, I'll just ask you before you get out of here. What's your last opinion on amateurism in basketball? You know, like the LeVar Ball kind of taking ownership of business.
I got to watch what I say.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, right. That was horrible. We started talking about it. I got way too comfortable.
Yeah. But the thing with the NBA is.
He can't say guys should go pro. He's recruiting people to college. Goodness gracious, Marcus.
But the 120th player in the NBA will make a whole lot more money than a 120th tennis player in the world. The tennis players, the superstars, are the ones that gobble up all the endorsements and all the money. I mean, what was it when they lifted that salary cap a year and a half ago or 2 years? Oh. And Mike Conley was at one time the highest paid player. Yeah. I mean, when those salary cap goes up, then the money gets really, really crazy at that time.
Rex, I appreciate it, man. Anytime. Of course I would slip that question in at the end of it. Steve, you're supposed to cut me off right there. Yeah, Marcus, don't
like,
do it.
Come on, dude. Hold on. Why are you asking stuff like
Midday
that?
Midday with Marcus Maven, 8150-939 is the number. Thanks a lot, Coach Rexy Carmo, 939 The Ville.
Middays with Marcus Maben, presented by PapaJohns.com on 93.9 The Ville. And right now, enjoy three medium one-topping pizzas for $5.55 each when using the promo code MABEN5.
Welcome back. Welcome back. Midday with Marcus Maben, 8150-93.9 is the number. 93.9 is the station. People, tell a friend to tell a friend right now. Royalty is in the building. And we got Steve Rubinger and Michael Bush. Oh, I couldn't wait to do that one. I could not wait to use that joke, Steve. You've gotten away with using that so many times.
That's perfect, man.
People, welcome to... We have a guest host for today and hopefully more, many more times to come. There's nobody who knows more about just going dog mode on everybody than the guy we got in the building right now. Michael Bush, welcome, man. Welcome.
Man, glad to be here, man. Thank you.
No, listen, I appreciate you, you know, taking the time out. Again, we'll go back over, you know, just a few things we learned about you in the last couple of minutes to kind of rearrange the entire interview. But let me say this. This is a rule. We have a custom that we have to get the uncomfortable, honest, non-political question out of the way first. That's the way we break the ice. Are you ready for the question? Because the question, like I said, don't you and don't
y'all must get, not mean my dad, man. He's straightforward. He'll tell you how it is.
Don't get yourself in trouble with this one. But people are on the edge of their seats waiting for the question. And Michael, sometimes you're just chilling by yourself and a thought jumps into your brain. And I want to know how often this thought jumps into your brain and does it come out of your mouth? The thought is, man, I was Lamar Jackson before Lamar Jackson. I should have been a quarterback. You are so mad at the University of Louisville for not making you the Lamar Jackson under Bobby Petrino before Lamar Jackson 15 years later. Oh, that years later.
No, man.
Oh, that's political. Political. We do it for you. So I know you think that a lot.
When all that first happened, Lamar's way after me. So when that – at the time, when I'm in
okay,
that
so
moment.
Okay, so we're going to go back to when you first came like, as a quarterback.
Yeah, when I was there, when I signed there, that's why I came here was to be QB.
Right.
You know, because the people backing me was Chris Redman.
Yep.
You know, Coach Redman, you know, Bobby Redman, Chris's dad.
Right.
And they believed in a system and a quarterback, you know. I mean, you watched the film. I had it.
Right.
Yeah, for sure.
So, yeah, that was when I made that comment about that. That's how I felt about it.
Is that a tough thing to acknowledge? Like, no. Even to this day, like, I should have been the quarterback.
Nah, man, because hey, life is good for me right now.
That's what I'm talking about. People, you definitely heard here. And I'm always hesitant because I don't want you to make the news and just, oh, yeah, Bobby, you know, because that's what it'll turn into,
right.
You know.
Yeah, nah, yeah. Right. Lamar Jackson is awesome, dude.
Yeah, right.
And when I said Lamar Jackson before, you know, me being dude got wheels. You know what I'm saying? I'm sub-spar P, dude. I don't have the skills that he got. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Now, as far as throwing the ball in, I feel like, you know, that is what it is.
With the best of them.
Yeah.
This is what I'm talking about, Steve. Yeah. We got the honest. Because, you know, it's one of those things where you say, how, you know, everybody knew, you know, we kind of heard the rumors, you know, hey, Mike's not really happy about, you know, the thing. But it's like part of it's competitor Michael Bush and part of it is, Chris is good, you know, like, you know, who else? Stephon?
Stephon, yeah. Man, we had Stephon. That's one of the best quarterbacks I've ever had.
That's what I'm saying.
Stephon made it work, you know?
At what point did you just acknowledge, like, did you have that moment where you're just like, yeah, he's cold?
Once they put me in the backfield and I was getting the beam, getting the ball, I mean, it wasn't nothing else to think about.
It didn't matter.
Yeah, I didn't care no more. So.
Okay.
I mean, he was sprinkling in some halfback passes. I mean, I was still, you know, throwing the ball in practice, just having fun. But at that time, once I got switched and I went through the whole little, you know, transition of wanting to leave school and all that, man.
I wanted to ask about that. Like, how much of that crept into you? Like, I need to be a quarterback somewhere else. And, you know, everybody, you know, hits that moment when you're changing positions or you're not, you know, you want to be a point guard and they move you to the two and, you know, things like that. So how heavy was that in your life where you said, nah, I might need to get out of here?
Again, at that time, it was heavy.
Right.
You know, because my senior year, I moved the quarterback just to show people that, you know, I'm not a running quarterback. I'm gonna throw the ball. I'm gonna stand in the pocket, take a hit.
Right.
But again, where I grew up playing ball on 10th Street, Muhammad Ali, Little League, and just growing up in the neighborhood, you had to be able to do everything.
Right.
Run, catch, jump, throw, you know. So moving wasn't that bad.
You played five positions on defense, I think, coming out of high school. Or is that legend?
That's legend.
They just all over the field.
You were just out there for the Hail Marys or something, you know, like that. Okay, well, let's go back a little further then, since you went to Muhammad Ali. You're getting recruited. You get some names, right? Seems like, you know, growing up, of course, everybody wants to play for their local. But Louisville was the place at the time where it did not have those big, you know, you didn't have big televised games on a national scale like you have now. Right. What kept you here? Because
other guys left. Montrell Jones, guys like that,
right,
left.
The names, I mean, names on your recruitment list are crazy. And I mean, did you just not open your ears to anybody else, or you took your time and made a real decision that Louisville was the best place for you?
Man, I ain't gonna lie, I was like 75% gone.
Really?
Yeah, wow. I was almost at
Bobby. So Bobby won you over, or was it your position coach or what?
It was man, it's home. That's it. It's home, you know. Because who's to say if I went to Ohio State that I wouldn't have got changed to
immediately.
Something on defense.
Were you more worried about that by going to somewhere like Ohio State? Like, did you feel like they were more likely to change you up positions? Or you're confident, so you might not have thought anybody could move you from positions.
I didn't think it was possible, but man, now knowing what I know, anything could have been possible. So
right.
I still wanted to play basketball too at the time. You know, so I grew up.
That was the question I had.
Did you just hear this, man?
No, I'm saying I grew up, man. It wasn't Louisville football. In my household, when I grew up, my parents was yelling at the TV, watching you play. Watching y'all catch play.
Listen, we're all family in here. Say they was yelling at you, not watching you play. They like,
shoot the ball. Hey, quit flexing at the camera, man.
Go rebound. Stop smiling all the damn time. Right. Okay, so you were basketball heavy first.
Yeah, yep. I started playing basketball first. I think football was kind of last, and baseball was last, but it was more basketball and then, you know.
So was your recruitment level higher in football? I mean, was it your height? You know, because it's amazing. You look huge on a football field, but on a basketball court, you kind of can just blend
He graduated 2 years before me, so I was a sophomore sitting at the King of the Bluegrass. And let me assure you, he looked huge on the basketball court too as a high school player. So,
well, how tall are you?
6'2".
It didn't matter.
I know. I was going to say,
watch dudes climb on his back.
I got more live questions. We sent it to the boards. We said, ask him his questions. They're like, nah, ask him about the time he dunked on, you know. We can't do highlight films, people. But so basketball.
Did it ever creep in here at Louisville? Did you ever think about, because that was a question with us. Like I said,
I was
a couple years behind you, and I remember all of us go, man, I wonder if he's going to play a little ball, like, you know, play both sides. Did it ever even kind of creep in, or was it talked about?
Of course, man. I got recruited by, like, Izzo, all those cats, and playing basketball. So it was like, I did an AAU circuit when it was, you know, fresh on. I was pretty good.
It just started. Yeah. Actually, the social media, you were just getting into that first wave, kind of.
Yeah, you know, as far as the film getting out there, we was a little late on it. But, man, I did it all. So, Tench was the first one to do it.
Yeah.
Big Tench, no disrespect to Tench. I feel like my game was a little better.
You can say,
I think most would agree.
You can say no disrespect, and we know what you mean.
Yeah. So, again, man, I came, and I had a meeting with, you know, Coach P.
He just didn't seem as sold on it. I mean, had he seen you play, or just in maybe in a pickup game?
Nah, he came and watched. He recruited.
Oh, when I was in high school. Okay.
But it's just like when I had that meeting.
You just know, something didn't feel like he wanted you.
It's like this. where you're sitting at,
yeah,
you know, he wouldn't look at me.
Right.
And had that conversation.
Right.
With that eye. So I'm like,
right,
that's all right, I'll just. And then I had the quarterback situation as well.
Yeah. So your plate, like, your plate was pretty full.
If I need to be the QB, I need to study and make it right.
Absolutely.
And if he wasn't giving me a
green light,
I want you to play.
Yeah.
I'm like, I ain't going to waste my time, you know, doing treadmill workouts if
right.
You know, I'm not going to be hooping. So.
Well, and you got to be all in. I mean,
I was going to say, and you're a big size. Yeah. I mean, he probably looks at you as fat, you know what I'm saying? Did you have that conversation or was kind of just, if you want to give it a shot?
It was just a very, you can play, you're good, you know, you'll help us, but it just wasn't.
Right. He went all in.
I didn't.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Right. Okay. So, so you're,
but I mean, all the guys that's in the NBA and been play. I mean, all of them. I've seen them out. They like, "What's up, Bush, man? Are you play the wrong sport?" Like they just, you know, from all of them, Jerry Jack to, I mean, Rondo. You know, just a lot of guys.
No, I always say the best feeling is to say or ask them about me. Yeah. When they say, "Oh, Mike, you can play basketball," go ask Rondo about me. You know, go ask somebody who knows about me, and they'll tell you.
I mean, it's just like my brother-in-law is Ben Simmons, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So like,
we didn't know if that was going to be off the table. Say that a little louder too. I was going to say, you can't just throw that out there. My brother-in-law Ben Simmons, you know,
that Ben Simmons too, not Ben Simmons from down the road.
But like, he went to this little tournament, you know, bring me the little. He's our tournament team, whatever, you know. I'm saying, yo, open up a book.
Wait a minute. Had this moment with Ben Simmons.
Yeah. Go look in that 2002 and see what you see, man.
Right, right. So what was that conversation like?
He just smiling.
A little bit of giggling. Yeah. Okay, so. I mean, I lost my spot. Starting.
Yeah, that's a lot right there.
That's a great little nugget to have, you know what I'm saying? So. Your wife, you know, how did that come about? You know, you met her and just, you realize. So you saw him.
I learned this on the documentary.
I was trying to get kind of a timeline to when you saw him. Like, okay, he was just a young.
I knew him before he was.
Right. Ben, that's what I'm saying. Like,
dude, when I met dude, he was like shorter than me.
Wow.
Really?
And then next thing you know, actually, I had him come and sit in. I was kind of showing him the way, trying to be a professional, but he might have been still kind of young.
Right.
Yeah. So, I had him come and sit in meetings with me when I was in Oakland.
Really?
Okay. Yeah, so when I was playing with the Raiders, he came over, him and his family came over. I had him sitting in the meeting rooms, sitting in the running back rooms, meeting guys. He watched practice. You know.
He was already ahead of the curve, like so much. Like
That showed, too.
Right. Yeah, not taking anything from the story, but that showed, you know, his development.
Absolutely.
He had a good break, you know, if you were doing something like that, only because you knew the importance of. Yeah. I mean, did you feel like you were ready for that when you actually got drafted? I mean, we're jumping all over the place, people. This is great stuff.
Yeah. Nah, but see, that's when the Petrino makes everything good, because, man, you're sitting in meetings all day.
Elaborate with that.
Yeah, like, I mean, when you wake up, you do the whole workouts and school and then come back. Then you got meetings, offensive, defensive meetings, and you break out into your position groups. And then, I mean, it's like all day until you practice.
So his meetings made you feel completely comfortable when you got drafted?
Yeah. Just his whole system, man. It was the terminology, learning protection schemes,
right,
and just plays and just, I mean, just
that's interesting because that tends to be an indictment a lot of times on Bobby, because they'll say, well, yeah, the system is very NFL oriented, but they'll use the quarterback, for instance. They'll look back at a Tyler Wilson, different ones, and they'll say, well, yeah, but his system's so easy that the quarterbacks don't necessarily translate to the league. And to hear Mike say,
so he turned you into a studier, say.
That's cool, yeah.
But it changes everywhere you go. I mean, I'm sure Louisville ain't the only school that have meetings all the time.
Right.
When you get to the league, when I was in Oakland, I want to say Hugh Jackson was our coach, and we had like 15 to 20 plays for code words. You know, like Texas, that meant
a different book. Yeah,
you
right.
Just had to study those 12, 15
and you're
plays
saying
and know it.
You assume Bobby's is like that right now.
Yeah, when they check in, I mean,
does that make you appreciate Lamar Jackson more?
It does, because when I came up here as a being from Louisville, when you're getting recruited by them, and I committed to come here, I was actually able to come to meetings.
Right. Yeah. Man, don't be getting violations, man. Was that legal?
No, it was legal. I was able to work out, and do stuff like that.
For sure.
And past the statute of limitations here. You know our people are down there in Atlanta right now appealing the banner.
I did not get paid.
You heard it here first, that's people. Michael Bush did not get paid to stay home. I'm glad you made that clear, too.
I did not get paid.
How many times? Are you asked that?
No. Yes and no. They kind of look at him like, dude, I ain't. Nah, they
right.
wouldn't.
One of the most irritating questions I get.
Yeah.
You know, and then it's like, those are almost fighting. Like, how much you get paid? It's like,
I'm like, dude, no one knew who we was. Yeah. Like, no.
Oh, you mean as far as
like football?
Louisville football.
Yeah. Like, nah, I didn't take nothing, you know. No need to. My parents is, man, they worked hard their whole life, man.
Right.
So
yeah.
I didn't need
right.
And I don't have that story. You know how them people had a heartbreaking story. Like,
right.
My hard nose, you know, construction.
Yeah.
Working in a factory.
Isn't it fascinating how many people get labeled with the struggling story? And you're like, no, I'm sure you, there was plenty of guys on your team that weren't struggling story. They just came here and they liked to play and they're dogs.
Exactly.
Got on the floor. Okay. So let's kind of backtrack. You're getting here in Louisville. What was it like as far as, cause I'm not supposed to say the name, like Anthony Simons, right? When we talk about his recruiting, I say you got to get away from home, or you got to be a different kind of person to deal with home. How was it dealing with home when you started really getting attention? Like when you really started kind of making a name for yourself, top offenses, you know, guys are rolling. People are saying your name in different circles of, you know, the money element gets in or the potential money, right?
Yeah.
What was it like living here in Louisville and being from Louisville?
See, ma'am, I think my whole mindset was different, you know.
Say words like entourage, and they say words like hangers-on.
My same group is who I had back then, which is I can count them all on four fingers, actually.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And they all didn't need nothing, you know. We all, you know, we had fun in college and stuff like that.
Right.
You know, that's where athletes kind of get themselves in trouble, you know what I'm saying, where they need to. Again, man, family is hard, you know, when you start being successful.
Right.
Learning how to bridge that gap, you know, but you got to think about yourself in the long run.
Like new family.
New family, yeah.
Right.
I mean, if you're a person that got five or six brothers and sisters, it's going to be tough trying to manage them, you know?
But
I ain't going to say manage them, but, like, you want to help everybody.
Right.
You just, it's tough.
Right. Okay, so what do you think Lamar Jackson is going through right now? Like, do you think he's in the new family period? Or do you think he's, you know, because again, you came back after a big time junior year. I mean, were you entertaining going to the draft out of your after your junior season? Because I mean, I know times change. You know, I know things.
Right.
Like I said, the net will have you thinking you're a first rounder, and an agent will have you thinking you're a first rounder, and then somebody else will tell you you're not getting drafted.
Yeah, so, but I remember after Mike's junior year, though, a lot of us were going, man, I don't know.
See, I think I was hurt towards the end of the bowl game.
Yeah.
Of your junior year.
Yeah.
Okay, so that kind of eliminated.
But I mean, at the same time, in running back, that was the year of Reggie Bush.
Yeah.
It was Lindell White.
Gracious.
Ronnie Brown.
Yep.
Kelly Williams.
That was like your class?
No,
your
that junior was junior year.
That was his junior year.
Oh, so it wasn't an option to come out.
Man, I didn't think so. Right. I mean, and junior year was my first true year playing running back.
Of really getting consistent
being
touches.
The guy, yeah.
Yeah, so I was like, nah, I'm staying.
Right. Oh, okay, so yeah. I mean, that kind of eliminates the story that you get, man, he should have, you know.
No joke, man. When I grew up, when I used to watch the NFL, I thought there was something like watching movies.
Right.
So I did not think that was possible for me to achieve.
Yeah.
So as I got older around my sophomore year and then going to that junior year, that's when I heard it. Like, man, you can make a living doing this.
How?
And that's when my switch is turning, you know.
How did that hit? I mean, like, you can remember those moments where it kind of like, man, you know what I'm saying? Like, or was it when you talk about seeing other players do it, that seems to resonate with you. When you see other guys do it in basketball and football, is that what kind of got, you know, your attention or kind of opened your eyes, just physically touching people who are going to the pros?
Sophomore, are you talking about sophomore year at Mayo, sophomore year at Louisville?
No, in college. I didn't think it was possible until I got to college.
Okay.
Yeah.
So did you see somebody in particular that you said, you know?
Just watching a film. Actually, man, when our building at Louisville is kind of unique, you know, like where the players are at.
Right.
Because they have this room where you see the scouts. and you would see them coming yeah. in all day at the time, you know, because we was loaded. We had a Mobile Courier, Elvis Dumervil, Will Gay, I mean, the quarterbacks, you know, Brom and all those cats, and people were just coming in left and right, and I'm like, man, they watching.
They're here to see me.
yeah.
So you, even so if you they're not a, here to see me, I get a chance to perform for them.
Yeah, you had a – if they come to watch somebody else, you try to make yourself being seen right. by, you know, playing tough and being good, so –
I'll never forget when I was on official here, Coach Norwood took us in a room and he had a full load of Mike Bush highlights and showed us 4 3-yard runs. And he said in each one of those, it was Mike, you know, taking a 3-yard loss, turning it into a 2-yard run.
Right.
He was like, boys, that's why he's going to play in the league. Like, I mean, I had him on lock, like, you know, and it was like, that's the truth,
I mean, man.
Man,
let's go through it. I mean, now you get drafted. Now you go out west. Were you disappointed you're going out west? Was there any kind of
I don't know if y'all know about my draft experience, though.
No.
That's why you're here,
yeah,
man.
Yeah.
We sitting tight.
So, you know, the leg injury changed a lot.
Right, of course.
So I was banking on, like, it's a couple guys before me that Willis McGahey tore his knee up, you know, but still got picked in the first round,
yeah.
You know. This what I get. I hear today. If man, if you didn't hurt your leg, you would have won the Heisman. You would have won the national champion. You know all that stuff.
I've said all that. Yeah.
Everybody says it. Yeah. Yeah. Like, what do you mean? Like, let's not be uncomfortable here.
You're right about that, Mike.
I'm surprised you haven't gotten to a fight over somebody saying it, even if they meant well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So like that year, I'm thinking, well, I didn't do nothing but just break a bone.
Right.
Right.
Surgery, metal in it. I'm good.
Right.
So me and my family.
How about that, Steve?
We decided to rent out a place. I think it was called Big Hops at the time, like a little restaurant.
Right.
Man, we invited the family there. ESPN was saying they're going to bring somebody to film you and this and that, right?
On draft day.
We get a call at the last minute. Well, we're not going to come. I'm like, all right, that's cool. You know, I'm still thinking my name going to be called the first 3 rounds.
That's first day still.
First day.
Yeah. Now first day is just 2 rounds, right?
Just 2.
Yeah, okay. they do it different.
My draft class was the longest first 3 rounds in the history of the draft. So that's why the first day is only two rounds now.
Right, yeah.
I sat and wasted my money visiting that, you know.
Waited
the whole day.
And you got a little touch of that with Jalen this year.
I sat in a garage, right, with a crate. And Jalen and his baby and, you know what I'm saying, and the mom and the two other friends. We sat in the garage just because, you know, it's one of those things. You could go early and you didn't lose anything or you could not go, you know what I'm saying? So I figured.
And you would get, I mean, I was getting calls like, all right, we're going to pick you up here.
Yeah.
They just keep going. Then I got.
So you were getting calls of people, you know, sizing up if you'll be available. Or
Did you
ever feel like they were spreading rumors through you at all?
Nah, I don't think so. Nah. I mean, I'm in a moment. I'm just like, man, just call my name.
Right, let's go, man.
So,
after the first round, you did not mind where you went or anything? You had no preference?
No, I didn't care. I mean, I knew the leg would play an injury, but I didn't think it was going to be that bad.
Did it ever cross your mind there was a good team coming back? Now, I know there was a coaching change, you know. Did it ever cross your mind to stick around?
No doubt. I was gone.
Okay.
Petrino left.
What if he hadn't have left?
It'd have been a tough call. I mean, I base my standard going off the trainers.
Yeah.
So when I had broke my leg, I don't know if they've dealt with that in the past.
Right.
You know, so I was like, I think if I leave, I would get a better.
Oh, a professional medical staff.
Okay. Yeah.
So that was just your confidence level into having people who've done it before.
Right. Yeah.
And my guys were great at Louisville.
Right.
Absolutely.
No, but you'd be fair enough to say,
oh yeah,
listen, these are professionals. It's like Andrews versus, you know, whoever else. It's like if he's world renowned,
that's fair. Yeah.
I mean, he, Dr. Ellis might be better, but you know, Andrews is, you know,
I just remember that being a conversation. You said, well, I mean, you know, he could have got the medical. I mean, without question,
right.
And could have come back. And I just didn't know if that was even an option in play at the time. It makes me feel better. Just saying. No,
I know. Right. Like so everybody wondering, you know what I'm saying?
No, they was wondering because I had seen Mr. George before.
Okay.
You know, he puts me in the office like, oh, so what you going to do?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. it sounded like he said it just like that.
Yeah, he said, where we going? I said, I'm sorry, man. I got to, you know.
How about that conversation? Yeah. Hey, Tommy.
Yeah.
I'm out. I'm going to get on out of here, you know, but I'm going to come back. I mean, were you with your transition? pros? Did you get a chance to make it back at all, or was it good for you to be far out west, kind of away from everything, to concentrate?
Well, I said that my whole rookie year. Yeah. I mean, they gave me hope that I was going to play. You know, I went through the whole practicing, playing, yeah, and for about 12 weeks, man, I was sitting on the sideline just conditioning.
Right.
And I'm like, you know, then they gave you.
No, it's funny. DeJuan always says the conditioning when you're out is worse than being game.
Yeah, no one wants to be hurt.
Right.
Because you're going to get tortured. Sure. Just yeah, what you feel like anyway.
Yeah, so you're saying rehabilitation is worse than actual practicing and playing.
Exactly. So I was doing that the whole time. Then around week of like 12, 13, they put me on a PUP, and I got practice the team for 3 weeks, and then, boom, that's like, well, we're going to put you on the IR. So that whole rookie year was basically non-existent.
And then a running back gets drafted the next year, right?
McFadden gets drafted
the next year.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you take that?
Are you still confident enough to say, I'll
get hold of him?
I'm still confident. And then as that season go, this how, man, I got strong opinions about the league, man. So
right,
yeah.
But as you get going, and as that season was winding down, well, no. We went 0-12 or 4-12 or something there.
Yep.
So then McFadden got drafted. He's playing. He gets hurt. Fargus is there, Justin Fargus. Man, yeah, both of these guys are my good friends, right, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And
they were good on Madden too.
Yeah.
I remember their rankings being a little overrated on Madden.
Yeah. So we get to this one, the confidence start coming to play. So we get to my second year, but my first year playing. Last game of the season, we're playing against Tampa Bay in Tampa.
Right.
John Gruden's last game. McFadden got hurt.
Right.
Fargus got hurt. But they kept trying to put them back in the game. And I'm sitting here, Tom Raffin was my running back coach.
San Francisco Raffin?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
And I'm like, he taught me a whole lot too, man. He's good. And I'm sitting here like, yo, y'all brought me here.
I'm ready.
Go.
Yeah.
Finally, McFadden's like, I can't do it no more. Fargus, like, I can't.
You actually heard him say that?
I mean, they really didn't say it, but I can tell. Yeah, they body like, language, they weren't done. So they threw me in. And they saying, no, I'll end up 27, 177, two touchdowns.
Yeah.
Gruden got
did
fired.
Did he just give you them stats right there?
Tampa didn't make the playoffs. And yeah, boom, I'm thinking, okay.
I'm on.
We rolling.
Yeah.
Nah, it didn't work like that.
Got McFadden back healthy, got Fargus.
They all
was it a money thing or? If you had to guess.
Yeah, I mean
because you don't make any
waves. I'm
saying,
but McFadden was good, though.
Yeah,
you know, he was a beast.
Absolutely.
You know
absolutely
what I'm saying? But, and they started incorporating a system where we both can roll.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And it's just my last year in Oakland when I actually had a chance to play.
Right.
Because I started, 13 games or whatever, and I almost ran for 1,000 yards. And, that was the first time I got to showcase I can catch, I can run.
Right.
Like, you know, do what I've been doing here. So I just felt like my whole time I was fighting an uphill battle, you know, because then I signed with Chicago, and then I'm behind Forte, and dude don't come. He ain't coming off the field.
Right.
Goodness gracious. People, Midday with Marcus. 8150, 93.9. Michael Bush here, 93.9 The Ville.